Hey, a long night, an early morning, and we'll talk about it. Good night for the Democrats in the House, bad night for the Democrats in the Senate. Good night for the Republicans in the Senate, bad night for the Republicans in the House. And a really good night for Democrats in Illinois. Did anyone stay up and watch the good fun?
I believe Mr. Grzanich is the record holder at the moment among our group.
How late?
Besides you, possibly.
I went to bed at 11:30.
Oh, dude, come on.
I know.
Yeah, you're
weak.
You took a nap.
You're weak.
You must 11:30. Have taken a huge nap.
No, I did not.
What?
I haven't slept.
No nap. You didn't sleep at all?
No!
Oh, my God. You win.
I'm all cranked up. I actually put a magic wall up at my house and just started talking about counties I didn't know anything about. So, you know, that way I felt more at home. Eric Edelstein is here later. Pat Brady's here later. Senator Durbin's still coming by?
Yes.
Okay. You know, we got post-election stuff out the wazoo. And let me show you where the wazoo is. How about our friend Connor? Is Connor coming in?
Connor is coming in.
Connor Gibbs is our Chicago Bulls correspondent, and obviously we still have a lot to talk about in relation to the Blackhawks. Dave, did you watch any of the election coverage?
I did, yes. Yeah. Sure. I saw Chuck Todd running around Election Central, going from one map to another, kind of frenetic.
It was kind of odd. They kept having him sit down then stand up. It was sort of like a hokey pokey.
I kept going back to MSNBC because I love Steve Kornacki.
Oh, he's out of his mind.
I could watch him in front of that map all night long.
Yeah.
Just that channel, just that alone, just Steve Kornacki talking about numbers.
The George Stephanopoulos needed a lint roller.
What do you mean?
Somebody needed to brush off the dandruff off his shoulders.
Was it dandruff?
I don't know. I wasn't there to actually
asbestos?
Inspect closely, but he had snow. Yeah, he had stuff all over
his
jacket.
Did it snow on him?
Maybe it was pizza crumbs, because I know that's big on election night.
How
maybe.
Did you notice that?
How do you not notice it?
I don't know.
It
I was, didn't watch him.
Pat is like, somebody's got to get over there and lint roll that
I think it's just
jacket.
You and Pat.
The ABC set, by the way, Mary, I don't know if you thought this as well. There was just too much going on.
Oh, my gosh. It was
dizzy.
A lot.
It
yeah.
was...
And I thought it kind of looked like a game show with the different panel desks set up. Yeah.
Well, who had, if you guys did what I did and popped around, who had the stupid-looking prices right? Thing that went from likely, unlikely, very strong. It was like an arm on a circle
I
thing.
I saw that. I don't know. I cannot say which channel.
They all had something similar to that. MSNBC had something like that where it kept going from, you know, 70% and then the arrow would go. Then at some point they said, look at it's wobbling, and then it would go to 80%. Maybe that's the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I think so. And it couldn't have been less tech. It was a very bizarre thing in 2018.
ESPN had it during the college basketball doubleheader.
Did they?
Yeah.
Possible? More possible?
How about we've got a happy Super Joe because they announced the college football playoff rankings and Michigan's number 4.
Yeah. Well, what about your face? How's your face?
My face is good. Though the lady at Myra that works at the Dunkin' Donuts downstairs said it's swollen, but not like to the point of disfigurement. So
Myra,
well, that's nice.
Myra, without knowing you. Said your
well,
face looks
her
swollen.
I see her every morning. She knew I was getting a tooth out because I couldn't get a sesame bagel. I had to get plain because you can't have little seeds for.
What time does that Dunkin' Donuts open up downstairs?
5 a.m.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
There's people in here at 5 a.m.?
Oh, there's people all over the Pedway, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, we do a show called The Opening Bell that starts at 5 a.m.
Yeah, we're not here at 5 a.m., are you?
Yes, a little before 5 a.m.
Come on!
I'm here earlier than that. Yeah.
What?
Me and Dave.
Yeah, we're all here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But Dunkin' Donuts is never open when I come
know.
In.
I know. It stinks.
I had no idea that was happening here. At 6:13, let's do the top six at 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
It was odd this morning when I walked in. Pat Brady's in the corner in the hallway on his phone. Did she just wander over here last night? He's just staying in the hallway?
I think he just stayed there, and he didn't even like look up
in
the hallway or anything. Yeah,
it's like a phone. Strange. You think it's like a phone counseling service or something?
No, it's very strange. Nice job by Pat Brady last night on Channel 9, by the way. Channel 9 did a nice job on coverage as usual.
They also ate pizza. Ben Bradley and Lourdes were tweeting out pictures.
Lourdes did a nice job with the social media. Mm-hmm. Well, they were all doing a nice job, yeah. But we, you know, some people we like.
And they
best.
Were all eating pizza.
Item number one: congratulations, J.B. Pritzker. Not just a win, a blowout. Governor Rauner gave sort of a wandering, meandering speech afterwards, but it got to a point, and the point was, it's been an honor to serve. Thank you, Illinois. So Rauner will serve out the remaining weeks of his term, and Pritzker becomes the next governor of the state of Illinois. And I'll say what I said on Twitter last night. You are now invited again, and it is an open-ended invitation to come on the show, answer fair questions, and talk about what you plan on doing for the state of Illinois. So we look forward to having the governor in and on the phone, either or, as often as possible. Next. A couple of big news items. Lauren Underwood, the first woman and first minority to represent the 14th congressional district, beat Randy Holdgren yesterday in a race that really, when it began, nobody thought she could win. And at last count, and it still could go up, over 100 women were elected to the House of Representatives for the first time.
That's awesome. It
really is.
Woohoo!
Yeah, it's a very cool story. As a matter of fact, more. Next. For the first time, a Native American congresswoman headed to the House. Two Muslim congresswomen as well in Massachusetts and Connecticut will send black women to Congress for the first time in their states, while Arizona and Tennessee are getting their first female senators. Whether or not it's a direct reaction to Trump remains to be seen. You could argue it, I suppose, in either direction, but it certainly seems to be the case. The president, by the way, is planning on holding a press conference this morning, I believe at 10 o'clock our time.
I saw that he said he still thinks that it was a victory for him yesterday.
Well, yeah, it was an affirmation in races that Republicans should have won. So, you know. But, you know, I mean, he could be hit by a bus and say the bus doesn't look so good.
Yeah.
Next, Democrats gain control of the House and several important governorships in the midterm, most likely presenting President Trump with a considerably more hostile political environment for the remainder of his term, including a lot of investigations and a lot of people in the House who are ready to take him on. A guy named Devin Nunes, who was a chief suck-up for the president, now falls into obscurity, and a congressman from California named Rohrabacher, who was colluding with the Russians long before anybody in the Trump family was, he appears to have lost his reelection bid as well. So I'm guessing he won't be able to get Vladimir on the phone anymore. At any rate, congratulations to the Republicans and my good friend Mitch McConnell, who look like they're going to have a 54-46 advantage in the Senate by the time this is done. But we also are likely to have a quagmire, a stagnation, a gridlocked government, because the Democrats will firmly be in control of the House. Final vote margin yet to be determined, but it's not close. Next, Jimmy Butler chartered a private jet to take teammate Tyrus Jones to see Tyrus's little brother Trey play in his Duke debut. Butler ended up not being able to go, but still let Tyrus take the plane to the game. This is how we know people have too much money. Dude, take my plane!
Yeah, he doesn't go. He lets Tyus go.
I just want you to know, if I had a private plane and you needed to go somewhere, Dave, I'd let you take it. I'd just toss you the keys.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool. He tried to go commercial, couldn't get a flight, and they would get him back because they have a game tonight. So he was able to go to Indianapolis and see his younger brother play for the team, which Tyus Jones led to a national championship. So
it's nice of Jimmy.
They said Jimmy's a great teammate up there, so.
Yeah, even though it's like he didn't want to be there.
Tearing the organization apart and handing out his private plane at all the different turns. He's an interesting guy.
Yes.
And then there's this. If you're headed for Michigan this weekend, light up. Weed is legal there now. Recreational marijuana in limited quantities have been legalized in Michigan as well as some other states. And it's coming here. It's just a matter of when. Top 6 at 6, complete.
The Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Fight for health care for everyone! For well-paid teachers and a quality education for our kids! For equal pay! pay for equal work.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
JB better save his voice. He's got 4 years. One of the bigger election stories from last night, at least as far as impact goes, is the Attorney General's office. And the Attorney General's office, Kwame Raoul, in a blowout, which is one of the more surprising results I saw on the Illinois side last night.
I thought it was cute. He tweeted that ever since he got out of law school, he's been dreaming about holding this position. And so I think he's really satisfied.
Well, that sort of gave me a little bit of confidence. And I like Kwame Raoul, and you know, he's been on the show and stuff. But he sounded completely like a nerd who really wanted the job. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounded like a very truthful
statement.
And
you tried to push him and ask if he was trying to just step on this position to get to a higher office.
Yeah, governor,
and he said
whatever.
No, but I really think he really wants this job.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you really want a job, maybe you do a better job at it. That would be the common sense extension there. The other post-election stuff for the state of Illinois and the surrounding area, Scott Walker loses in Wisconsin. The Democrat won the governor's office in Iowa as well, right, Pat Brady, who joins us now early?
Yeah, I think air was working over there. Healthcare, big issue over there. Yeah.
So the Democrats, I think, picked up five governor's mansions around the country. I thought you made a good point last night on the Channel 9 coverage. You're concerned about the mansion now?
Yeah, I you can't rip those toilets out. Those were all put in there with private sector money.
Meanwhile, in Florida, there
the
is...
taxes in Springfield are a lot cheaper.
99% of the vote is in Florida, and this is the Andrew Gillum race.
Yeah, DeSantis Gillum.
Yeah, 0.7% is the split, and I think the law in Florida is 0.5%, and it's an automatic recount. So,
well, thank God,
close.
No more hanging chads.
Is Florida still... This swing state we thought it was, or is it changing?
Yeah, obviously purple. I mean, that couldn't have been any tighter. Both the Senate race and the governor's race, super tight.
And in the Senate race, that's not over either. That right. could be an automatic recount. So the best case scenario in the Senate, pardon me, I'm losing my voice, and I wasn't the one shouting. The best case scenario in the Senate appears to be a 52-48, and that's if all three outstanding Senate races go in the opposite direction they are now. That's unlikely. It looks like a 54-46.
Yeah, like, good night in the Senate. But remember, there was only one seat that the Democrats were running in Nevada where Hillary Clinton in the previous election actually won. So, but it was a good night, but not so good in the House and in Illinois. Disastrous. And I blame the Roskam and Hulkin losses squarely on the president.
Yeah, and that seems to be the common sense consensus around the country as well, that the president killed the House.
He did. And here, I walked precincts in both those areas during the course of this campaign, and the dislike for the president with suburban women is clearly noticeable. And that's,
heck yeah.
That's what caught us. Yeah, you can't talk like that and expect that suburban women or behave like that are going to vote for you. They just didn't. And young people, too.
Well, and Sandberg, you've leaned right most of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's things that you have to draw a line on. And the president's take on women is obviously one of them.
Yes. The president's take on other things as well. But right. That one is particularly irritating.
Well, especially with a daughter, right? You have a daughter growing up. I mean, I look at Abigail Grace, and, as I've said many times, I would like her to have a chance to grow up and screw up the country like her grandfather's generation did.
You know, in my house, we celebrate Ronald Reagan's birthday. I gave my kids off school on February 6th last year.
It's a national holiday.
I literally text them and say, you don't have to go to school today because it's Reagan's birthday. So that's how they were raised, and that's how they think. They can't stand him either.
Yeah.
And it's not because he's not really a conservative. Mm-hmm. And
let's be honest, he's not really a Republican.
He's not really a Republican, and he doesn't stand for the things that the party stands for. And I think that's why, in a particular state like Illinois, we got to get back to the kind of what the party's all about, not this. He's got to shut up.
Yeah. Well, he may be forced to. The Democrats, of course, have to have a message and a reason to exist, and they're really bad at that.
Boy, they did score, though, at the end, and I still think it's a big lie on the pre-existing conditions argument, but you know what? They got an argument that worked.
Discussion of that will continue with Eric Edelstein after 7 o'clock as well. How late were you up?
Oh, no, like 2. I watched it.
Yeah, you beat me.
Yeah, what? I'm at 2 in the afternoon, I'm at.
I dozed off at 11, and I woke up three different times in the middle of the night and couldn't resist and had to go back for more.
Remember, it was 04, Clinton, not Clinton, Gore, Kerry Bush.
Uh-huh.
I got on the couch at 6 p.m., got off the couch at 6 a.m., never went to sleep.
Yeah, so
that was pretty exciting. But last night was exciting, too, because the Arizona race, I wanted to see what happened there.
So we'll talk about the Democrats and whether or not they can get their act together, or in 2 years are we going to be talking about flipping the House back to the Republicans? Meanwhile, there's about 30-plus Senate seats that will be up in 2 years. I think it's 33. And the map is favorable for the Dems to pick up the Senate. So in 2 years, it's not out of the question, if the Dems don't get their collective heads out of their collective blue behinds, that you could have a Republican House and a Democratic Senate. So the point being, for all of you who voted, and thank you for voting, 115 million is the estimate nationwide for the vote, which is way beyond a record for a midterm. I haven't seen any Illinois turnout numbers yet, have you?
Not the final numbers, but thank everybody that ran, too, and participated. That's very difficult.
Yeah, well, you would know more about that than I would, but again, the fact that people are out there voting makes a big difference, regardless of how you voted. Coming up on 6:30, we get to the headlines next on 720 WGN.
We reject the hate that has come from Donald Trump, the divisiveness that has come from his mouth, that has created an environment where people are sending packages and going into houses of worship.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Again, in case you just woke up, you're waking up to a Democratic House of Representatives, a Senate firmly in control of the Republicans as the Republicans pick up seats, and a near Democrat sweep in Illinois last night. We'll get to all of it after 7 o'clock when we go deeper in politics. Coming up in just a few minutes here, Connor Gibbs. Sandberg, explain who Connor Gibbs is.
Connor Gibbs is our Chicago Bulls correspondent. He's 10 years old. He's a fifth grader at St. Clement.
And he'll be here in a few minutes. Now, there's no big news to talk about with the Bulls, but we really like Connor. And he knows more about the Bulls than we'll ever know.
Yes, and he makes Bulls discussions on air more palatable for you.
Yeah,
and we're gonna check in with him once a month during the season. So we're excited to have him in studio. And just for people concerned, he did not take an Uber over by himself. His father did accompany him.
Oh, well, I think that's important.
Because now the young people in the city do take Ubers.
Is he in the PPG Paints green room right now?
He is.
Okay, good.
A celebrity guest. Can I ask you a question about the election last night?
Sure.
I don't know if we have enough analysis yet, but have they had a midterm show out like the turnout like this before?
Nope.
So we're proud numbers of the people that voted, right?
Yeah, we're making America vote again.
That's what we wanted.
It's very good. Thank you to everybody that stepped up to vote. So, and by the way, we don't know the turnout in Illinois, but with 115 million around the country, we have to assume that we were up substantially as well.
I know my polling place, the number of registered voters, they were at about, and this is about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they had about 25% of the registered voters had already shown up. I don't know if it was the polling place or the district. But it was very higher than
did you hear the number one statistic about how we know that turnout was up in Illinois and around the country? Ran out of stickers
are
and yep. This affects your family.
Oh my goodness, my mother was a little bit frustrated just because she and my dad went to vote and they got Spanish I voted stickers, and she just asked where the English ones were and they were out of them, and so she wanted to have the choice. It was frustrating to her.
Yeah. And I didn't even
and
know
she
you
doesn't
could
know Spanish, so I think it says, you know, you voted, but she wanted to see it in
English. I don't know that. I guess you can get them in any language. I didn't realize that.
It's weird.
Wait till Trump hears about this.
My son's dog, I saw a picture on Instagram, and she was wearing an I voted sticker.
The now, dog? Do we know if the dog voted?
I would assume if she had the sticker, she voted.
You can't just get a sticker.
Some people must have hoarded the stickers, I think, and, you know, put them on dogs and everything.
You can only get one. That's the thing.
When
you put your ballot in, you get a sticker. And if you ask an extra sticker for an extra sticker, the volunteer will tell you, you better have a cute kid. You got a cute kid with you, they'll get a sticker. Otherwise, you don't get a bonus sticker.
Because our boss, Stephanie, I think both her kids got voting bracelets.
Yeah, I got a voting bracelet at my polling place.
Yeah.
It was a voting bracelet.
On October 22nd, they had plenty of stickers, and I got one there. Steve's sticker is featured on the Steve Cochran Show Instagram and on the Steve Cochran Show Facebook, and it's almost as big as your forehead.
Yeah, it's a big sticker, and we went through a whole photo shoot to make sure that we got the perfect angle so I'd look like as much of a dork as possible. I didn't vote till like 2 o'clock yesterday. We had a nice line at my polling place, and some very nice volunteers who are listeners to the show.
Were you offered a donut?
I was not. However, as I was checking in, one of the women who was working the table said,
I really enjoy your show.
And then I leaned forward to her and I said,
thank you. Why are we whispering?
Let's tell everybody.
She didn't want people to know.
She's a secret listener.
I had an Uber driver yesterday, 57-year-old gentleman from Aurora. He's a custodian. Daniel is his name. He originally was born in Birmingham, Alabama. And when I got in, he had...
Should know a lot about him.
I know. Well,
well, she was coming off dental drugs, so she was talking a lot.
How do you remember?
He had 720 on when I got in, so I said, oh, are you listening to this station? And he said, I'm waiting for this old guy to finish so I can listen to Roe. So he was calling John Williams the old guy. And he said, I love Roe in his Carnarvon wagon. I've been following it for years. And I love that Vic Riora problematic.
That's tremendous.
I know. It was great.
That's so good.
Yeah, Violetta must have voted. She's got her bracelets stuck to the computer.
I am told. Is this accurate? That was the first time she voted yesterday?
Yes.
And she like 25, 26, 27?
Yeah.
No wonder it's all decorated in here.
You got to start somewhere.
You do. Good
for
her.
This is good, though. The millennials are voting.
Got him interested.
Yeah. My son was so proud yesterday that he voted when he got home from work, and he just kept talking about everything that happened at the polls.
That's great.
I'm like, wow, because he's usually at college. This is first year that he's actually home. So.
And the 18 to 29-year-old number, Steve, I'll be curious to see as well if it comes across your screen, as well as the Illinois number, because those have got to be big, I would think.
They were talking about it last night. The numbers not formed up, but the 18 to 29 numbers were very big in the Chicago area and the suburbs.
Cool. Yep. As time allows, coming up, you are showering wrong. So if you're listening on your Alexa or whatever in your bathroom this morning, or on your phone, or on a radio, crazy as that may sound, and you're about to get in a shower, I'm telling you, you're doing it wrong. The book is called Glow, The Dermatologist's Guide to a Whole Food Younger Skin Diet. But apparently we're all showering wrong. So, just, you know, I think
I disagree.
It's important information.
I think I've got that right, but we'll see later.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
Why are we so blessed?
Well, we'll get to that later, Todd. First off, some predictions from the sports fans on today's game. Pat?
Bulls, 149-23.
Carl?
Bulls, 149-52.
Okay, some difference of opinion there between you guys. Todd?
Bulls, 402-0.
The Bulls.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Who can set the court on fire? Only the Bulls.
Well, Dave, you and I are old enough to remember a guy named Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I can remember before Michael Jordan, Steve.
And six championships.
Yep.
That if Michael hadn't decided to play baseball, would have been nine.
Yeah, nine in a row.
And then the Bulls went to the dark side of the moon. And we have faith that they're going to come back. We just don't know when, which is why it's so important that we have someone who knows the NBA inside out. And I'm not talking about you.
I understand that. Not sure how I take it, but I understand.
Listen, I think you can learn a lot from this next guest. Connor Gibbs is here, and Connor is our Chicago Bulls correspondent. Good morning, Connor. How are you?
Morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How old are you?
10.
And where do you come by this knowledge of basketball?
Just like I watch a lot of it, and I play basketball.
Your team. What's your team? Let's plug your team.
LVL.
LVL stands for what?
Lakeview Lakers.
And I forgot what you told me before. You're forward?
Point.
Point guard.
He runs the show.
What's your number?
22.
Now, do you just pass? You're a pretty good shooter, too.
Yeah, I'm a very good shooter.
Oh, you are? Mm-hmm. What's your shot? What's your go-to shot? Michael used to have about a 15-foot fall away. Never missed it. What's yours?
Probably like right inside the three-point line.
Oh, very nice. Got a nice jumper? You got hops?
Yeah.
All right, good to know.
Connor, when you're playing, do you wear the sweatbands, around your forehead and on your wrists or anything?
No.
How about the sleeve? You got the sleeve?
Sometimes.
Oh, very nice. I'm going to have Dave.
You all NBA knowledge with the sleeve.
I'm not just a pretty face. I know my stuff. Dave?
All right, Connor. The Bulls are all beat up. Markkanen's out. Dunn's out. Valentine's out. Who am I forgetting? There's another
Artis Gilmore.
Yeah, he's
no longer playing.
Yeah. So what has impressed you about the Bulls with a 3-8 record to this point?
Yeah, what's the good news, Connor?
Yeah, give us some good news about the Bulls.
Zach LaVine has been playing really good.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been playing good defense. That's the bad thing.
Well, let's stay positive for a second. Why has Zach LaVine been playing so well, and what does he play well in regards to what he's doing?
He's been really good driving to the basket, and last night he actually did good shooting, and he made the game-winning free throw.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Bobby Portis, by the way, was the guy, the name, the other injured Bull.
Yeah.
It was pretty significant.
And all of those were, they were playing in the balls together at Chuck E. Cheese, and things got a
little
rough.
That's how it started. Yep.
That's what I had heard. Sammy, you have a question for Gunnar?
So, do you think Derrick Rose is a Chicago, is he a Chicago guy, even though he's no longer playing here?
Chicago Bull forever, isn't he?
Yeah, sure.
He had a career game, his career game last week, right?
Yeah, 50 yeah. points.
50 points. Are you impressed by that?
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed. And he also, I'm pretty sure he had the game-winning block for that game.
Yeah, so there you go, playing both sides, right?
Yeah.
What's your personal best game points-wise?
I think like 16.
16? Dude, that's good. Did anybody accuse you of being a ball hog?
No.
No, no, good no. Good no.
So, aside from the Bulls, who's your favorite NBA player?
Kyrie.
Really? Okay. Kyrie Irving?
Good, mm-hmm. good pick.
Everybody goes Steph Curry. Every kid in the world goes Steph Curry, and yet you go Kyrie Irving.
What do you like about Kyrie?
What's another example that you know the game?
I think that Kyrie, like, I respect that he left the Cavs, so he wouldn't be in LeBron's shadow, and now he's, like, top three on the Celtics.
LeBron seem old to you?
Not really.
No, that's good, because he's really not.
But you were Zach LaVine for Halloween, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So he's also one of your favorites.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now we know your dad a little bit. Can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
Your dad's not a tall guy. So are you going to be able to play point guard, you think? Because I could see you getting to 6 feet.
Yeah, probably.
I'm counting on you getting to the NBA. Because nobody else in the league will talk to me.
His mom has long legs, so I think there's a chance that maybe there'll be some height from her.
Well, we know your dad's an athlete.
Yeah.
But was basketball his game, too?
Yeah, I think he played a little bit of basketball.
Mm-hmm. I think he played football for right. Notre Dame.
I've heard of him.
I'd like to address with him off the air why Brian Kelly wears such a tight jacket on the sidelines.
Yeah, yeah.
Something's bothering me.
It seemed like the gear guys could get him one that fits.
Yeah, it's a little snug on the tummy.
All right, so what do we need to do to turn the Bulls around, and do you have hope that they will be turned around? If you could pick one player to lead the Bulls, if we could make a deal for anybody in the league, who would you get? And it can't be Kyrie.
LeBron.
LeBron.
Yeah.
LeBron coming to Chicago. Dave, was there ever any talk of LeBron coming here?
Yeah, remember they met with him when he hit free agency before they put the big three together in Miami.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah,
Stephen A. Smith told us, he's coming to Chicago for sure, and I believed him, and then he was wrong.
But there were a lot of people who believed that at the time, that they were going to get him.
Yeah.
And they ended up with, that was...
It's 2010.
Yeah, but that was... when they all ended up there and Wade and...
And that was when the Tea Party won the house.
And Connor...
That has nothing to do with this.
LeBron wore a very ugly shirt the day he announced that announcement that he was going to Miami.
Sometimes our friend Sandberg notices things the rest of us don't notice. if there's one NBA rule you'd change, what would it be?
I don't like the... the path rule. What's it called?
The clear path?
Yeah, clear path rule.
Yeah. What's
I don't
clear
know what
path
that
rule?
Is.
It's like... So if you foul them when like they're about to go to the basket, so that way like they don't get the layup. But like there's like this strange thing that they do, but like they don't always call it. And
the clear path rule means you got to get out of the way.
Yeah, and like you can't foul him while he's going to the basket.
Well, if you can't cold cock a guy while he's trying to score on you,
that's
I don't
right.
know what we're talking about.
They're taking all the fun out of sports now.
By the way, ask your dad what cold cock means on the way home in the car.
Okay.
What grade are you in?
Fifth.
And you're a pretty good student?
Yeah.
Okay, because scholarship. Three words, scholarship. That's going to be a good thing. And outside of basketball, what do you like to do? What do you do for fun?
I play flag football.
Spend any time with your family?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hang out with your dad?
Mm-hmm.
Also, last time there was an inaccuracy, he watches a lot of basketball with his mom. That did not get mentioned, not just his dad.
Well, that's equally important. Sure. Mm-hmm. Do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a brother and a sister.
Who's more annoying, your brother or your sister?
My sister.
Okay.
She's older.
Took you a while to answer that. Why is she more annoying?
She just always tries to attack me, and she's just like, oh, my God.
How old is she?
12.
Oh, 12, yeah.
Grace is a force to be reckoned with.
It's a troubling age. And your little sister's how old?
Little brother.
No, I have a little brother.
Oh, little brother. How old's your little brother?
7.
Are you a good big brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, can he play basketball?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, you working with him? For his age, yeah. You working with him?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Is he tall?
Yeah, he's pretty tall.
Your dad's not very tall.
No.
Oh, we covered that. Listen, man, it's great to have you in. So the next time you're on the show, I want you to have a Bulls question for us. Or okay. A basketball question in general. And, we'll play a little bit of a game for the listeners and see if they can win some prizes.
Okay.
All right. Did we give Connor a pizza yet?
No.
All right. You like pizza?
Yes.
All right. Lou Malnati's pizza, but you can't let anybody else in the family have any.
Okay.
All right.
Especially his sister.
Especially that sister that won't leave him alone. You want to say hi to anybody?
Hi, Mom. Hi, Luke. Hi, Grace.
Good call. How about sucking up to a teacher? Any teacher you want to say hi to?
Hi, Miss Carrick.
Who's Miss Carrick?
My teacher.
Which one?
Just like my homeroom.
Nice. Yeah. Good looking kid. A lot of talent. I'm a big Connor fan. And do you have a website you want to buy? Okay. Thanks for being on, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to your dad for driving. I assume he drove. Thanks to your dad for driving. Yeah. All right, bud. Thanks.
Good job. So is he going to do the sports at 7, or do I have to stick around?
He's our basketball specialist,
Dave.
Okay,
I'm sorry. He's
That's what I'm talking about.
Specialist.
We will strive for the highest graduation rate in the nation. We can become the biggest hub of entrepreneurship between the coasts. We will grow the diversity of our economy by growing jobs across Illinois, especially for communities that have been left out and left behind.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Oh, big night for Democrats in Illinois. Big night for Democrats in the House. Big night for Republicans in the Senate. A few of those races are still left up in the air, but it looks like it'll get no better than, what would you say, Pat Brady, 54-46 in the Senate?
Looks that way.
Okay. Eric Edelstad joins us as well, and Eric was working with many candidates around the country. How did your company do on election night?
It was a mixed night. It was a good night for Democrats, as you said. Had a lot of wins, had a few losses, had a few that are still up in the air.
Mm-hmm. And the Iowa governor's race, we made a mistake earlier. We gave it to your candidate.
Yeah, we were up most of the night. It looks like the incumbent Governor Reynolds is ahead by a point. Fred Hubble conceded last night. It was a neck-and-neck race for months, really a toss-up.
Is there an easy way to explain, because I think people are troubled by this, why a concession speech would come with many thousands of votes still to be cast?
Well, you can kind of do analytics and sort of see what votes are out and if they're in certain places that won't necessarily turn to your candidate, you can kind of get a sense of where it goes. Like Georgia's the opposite, where you have Brian Kemp ahead, but Stacey Abrams knows there's tens of thousands of absentee and provisional ballots that are still out. And as we've talked about on this show, there's a runoff provision if nobody's over 50, and Kemp's right at 50.5 right now.
Well, here in Illinois, we had a couple of upsets, but Pat, were you surprised at the thrashing the Democrats gave to the Republicans?
Yeah, I was surprised, particularly with Roskam and Hooker losing out in the western suburbs. And we lost 7 in the House. Actually, Rodney Davis's race, downstate congressional race, was a lot closer than I thought it would be.
I thought the Lauren Underwood thing was interesting.
It's a big story. I mean, she really came and shocked the world on that one. I mean, that was not a race against Randy Hulkern that anyone saw coming. She was a dynamic candidate. The GOTV rally that President Obama was at, everyone said that she was one of the best speakers there. And she pulled it off in the suburbs.
And that district is a tough district for a Democrat to win. I think Trump won it by 4 or 6.
What do you attribute to Hulkern not getting it done?
I think they were asleep at the switch. And I think woke up a little too late, and Trump killed us out there.
He didn't help in the Roskam situation either.
No, if you drew a straight line from here to 100 miles west of here, that's the area that Trump absolutely killed Roskam and Hulkern.
Casting Roskam was particularly ugly. But it was interesting, afterwards, I'm popping around all night watching the coverage, because that's a kind of a wild night I had, and in more than one occasion, talking to people at the Kasten party, they brought up the fact that Roskam didn't come to the district and Kasten will, and you and I talked about that on the air and off the air, Are the Republicans in the House going to get the message? Are the Democrats in the Senate going to get the message? You got to do town halls. You got to come back and talk to the people.
Yeah, I'm sure they didn't. And actually, Peter Roskam is one of the best people in that setting that I know that's in Congress. I know I heard people say that they were casting supporters, and he had some very, very strong support from certain groups. I still think, though, the bigger picture was that people in that district cannot stand the president.
The attorney general's race, I think we all thought would be fairly close. It wasn't. What's your take on that, Eric?
You know, I'm really proud of Kwame, proud to have worked for him. I think he'll be a terrific attorney general. He ended up getting, I think, almost as many, if not more, votes than Pritzker got, which was a huge blowout. So, you know, I think it was just a testament to him being a good candidate, but also the year. And, you know, when you have the top of the ticket that performs so badly, it's really hard for these down ballot races to get competitive. I think Harold did what she could, but I think she had the wind in her face, and she was up against a superior candidate, in my opinion. And I think Kwame will be a terrific attorney general.
Now, you flew around the state with Erica Harold a couple of days ago.
On Monday, yeah.
What was the buzz you were getting then?
Buzz was we were getting polls, which are always wrong, that had it tight and that she had big gains amongst women, but she got creamed in the burbs, and you need to get certain numbers up there or you're not going to win.
Were polls not right because all these other people voted that don't typically vote?
There was an interesting thing that came out last night, and I think this is, I hadn't thought about this, I'm sure you guys had, and it was an absolute sort of statement, and it came from a couple of different reliable sources, and they said Trump voters do not talk to pollsters, and if they do talk to pollsters, they lie.
Yeah.
And that can screw up the math.
I think we've been talking about this for several cycles, and I think every cycle it gets worse. I think the polling paradigm is terribly broken. I don't have a solution for it. I'm not smart enough to figure out what replaces it. But what happens in these cycles is we complain and we say, well, that happens. People lie. You have racial politics in Florida and Georgia, particularly in Florida, more so than in Georgia,
yeah,
where it looked like Gillum was going to win comfortably, at least by the polling. You know, the Abrams one, all the polling said it was a dead heat, and it basically is a dead heat. But polling's broken. And the way we do survey research in politics has got to be revamped or
stop using it.
Or stop using it. But what happens is, you know, everyone says this at the end of these cycles, and then you get busy again on the next cycle, and no one has a better solution, so you fall back on it again, and everyone starts playing the poll game again.
What about rock, paper, scissors, Pat? Would that work?
I think so, but did you see on Meet the Press Sunday, the Democratic pollster, the African-American guy, is pretty good, very good.
He even Cornell said, Belcher?
Yeah, he goes, don't listen to pollsters because we have no idea what's going to happen.
I mean, the ones that are honest with you, I mean, I'll tell you, there were a couple races where we had ones where we were doing a lot of tracking, and they were like, I'm going to report these numbers, but I don't believe them because I think we got a weird sell today.
because the math says what it says.
I mean, they know it's so hard to get people. Look, I know this is boring technical stuff for some of your listeners, but in the 70s, when the Gallup people were saying, we get 7 out of 10 people we call complete a survey, what happens when it gets to 5 out of 10? Will it still be reliable? We're below 1 out of 100
right
now. New York Times did that fascinating project where they're doing polling, and you can see in real time how many phone calls they had to make just to reach people. It's tens of thousands.
And there's only so much extrapolation you can do before the market of error takes up too much space.
And again, the fundamental reliance on polling is the people you're talking to are representative of the people you're not talking to.
That's why I've always been a rock, paper, scissors proponent.
Right.
Issue.
Or they're telling the truth. I was on the phone one day, and I was answering questions. And Julie's like, what are you talking about? I was giving all these liberal answers.
Yeah.
I'm talking to a pollster.
Right.
I'm a liberal Democrat, but I'm voting.
You know what? You're part of the problem. The governor's race and more in Illinois and the national stuff with Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady in a moment. And the MVPP as well.
Susan B. Anthony should be her voice. To injustice in the system, be the lady's choice. For 60 years, she was the moral code for America to give justice for all. Go vote. Just like Susan wanted vote.
Time for the most valuable person on the planet. Susan B. Anthony could not be with us today, but it is Susan B. Anthony. Millions of Americans cast their ballots in the midterm elections were proudly wearing their I voted stickers. Some women, however, decided to do something different with theirs. Susan B. Anthony is buried in Rochester, New York, and the gravesite is accessible by the public. And a number of female voters made the gesture in tribute of one of the leading figures who fought for a women's right to vote by taking their I voted sticker and placing it on her grave. Before the day was done, it was covered with hundreds of I voted stickers by women who had finally gained the right for Susan B. Anthony's work through the 19th Amendment in 1920, 20 years after she died. Rochester, New York resident Nina Pacini visited Anthony's grave after she voted, posted a photo to her Instagram. And Sandberg, this is all social media. When this thing went viral, there was no stopping it, right?
No, people just kept piling them on. And I think it was cool to see that it's not just one person thought it. A lot of women paying tribute to the person.
Yeah, all is a tribute. Why.
Yeah. And I didn't realize it took 20 years after Susan B. Anthony died for women to be able to vote.
Almost didn't happen then.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because we should be in charge. So we need to be able to vote.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You are in charge. It's just not a political thing, and eventually we'll get it right.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't Steve Bannon warning about that?
About the Susan B. Anthony sticker thing, or
no,
about
women
being in charge? Oh, yeah, he's very afraid of that. Yeah,
he should be.
Did you see he got 15 people in the audience for one of his speeches the other day? He's a real hot ticket right now.
This is not an exaggeration. His last couple events started with ticket prices going from $250 to $100 to $50 to $10 to free. The only thing after free is we'll pay you to show up.
But if you wanted to hear a crank scream at the wind, you can go to a bar and just sit there and not just buy yourself drinks and not listen to Steve Bannon.
That's a good point.
Hey, careful on that bar talk.
Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady are here. Any Lincoln Forum news?
No, I think we're going to have a mayoral debate, but that won't be till after the first year.
All right. And speaking of the mayor's race, Eric, here's your favorite topic. Susana Mendoza won last night.
She did. She actually was, I looking this morning, she was the, besides Jesse White, the top vote getter of the statewide ticket.
So I'm watching the news on Saturday because that's the kind of wildlife I'm living. And or is it Friday? And I see my friend Eric on TV, and I pay a little closer attention at that point. And they're talking about a...
Was he holding the CD?
He was not, actually, no. Talks about a leak from a commercial you did. Now, we should re-explain, I suppose, that your company does commercials for candidates.
Right.
And in the process of doing commercials for candidates in the big picture, it might be efficient to use their time in a way where, let's say, this one candidate, not anyone in particular, but this one candidate, if it was a she, were deciding to run for mayor, you could record a potential commercial they could get out immediately right after she announces. That was what happened with Susana Mendoza?
Right. Well, we were filming her comptroller ads, and there was a lot of talk, and she was seriously considering running for mayor, and I sort of pushed to get some lines. I thought it was smart. We got the lines. She hadn't decided. And unfortunately, something happened that has not happened in 20 years, which is somebody that was working for us stole it and leaked it out to, I believe, not just the media, but potentially another campaign.
Now, on a serious note, that's a problem.
And it's a crime.
Yeah, it's a problem, and it's a problem at work that I assume you guys are pretty upset about.
It's a big deal for us. It's never happened to us before. I mean, we did, I think, 600 ads this cycle that went all over the country. That's never happened. It's just, it's inexcusable. We have systems in place to prevent it. But look, the thing
Eric,
is...
I'm sorry, I saw that CD in your wall.
Yeah, right. Look, the fact of the matter is, it was no big secret that she's considering running. The fact is, she hadn't made up her mind. I don't think it was, people have said, oh, you leaked that on purpose and trying to plant your flag.
Well, don't make your face. That's one of the things I thought.
Yeah, I know.
I was reading the paper laughing. I go, whoa, Eric, that's pretty bold.
No, but look, bottom line is, I said on Friday, it shouldn't have come out, but I hope she does run because I think she'd be a terrific mayor. I think the city could use her energy and her vision. I think she would be the one candidate out there, unlike the rest of this field, that would be about the future. I mean, the rest of them are kind of all about what they did in the past, and she would really be a future-oriented candidate. I hope she does decide to run.
If she does decide to run, it has to be soon. So how do you feel about people being upset in this short window of opportunity saying she shouldn't have run for the office she holds if she even was considering seriously running for mayor?
Well, I think last night was a pretty resounding rejection of that idea that people wanted her reelected as comptroller. She's a leader in the state.
Right, but if she's not going to do the job.
Right. Well, she's going to do the job if she decides to run for mayor until she does that.
What's the latest she could get in?
Well, the petitions are due at the end of November. I think it's November 20-something, 24th, 25th.
What do you need? About 25,000. That's a big number, isn't it?
You need 12,500, but yeah, you have to have a multiple of that. So it's a big deal. Obviously, she's got to make up her mind quickly. I think there's a whole lot of people who are already in the field who are doing everything they can to keep her from running because I think she becomes a first-tier candidate right away if she decides.
We'll get to the governor's race, I promise, coming up, but we got to take a break here to come back for the headlines in a second. Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady. More on election night. And again, thank you for voting in record numbers, 115 million people nationwide. We don't have the Illinois number, but we have to assume, based on anecdotal evidence and that number, that it's big. We'll be back in a moment at 720 WGN.
We reject red hat slogans and Twitter tirades.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
J.B. Pritzker is the next governor of the state of Illinois. And last night, that race, we mentioned the attorney general's race not being as close as well, I thought it would be. Neither was the governor's race. You know, but let me just finish that attorney general discussion for a second. Pat Brady, does Erica Harold have an interest in running for another office? Because she seems like a candidate who would have that kind of, you know, buzz going forward.
Yeah, I would hope so. But she probably needs to take some time off after this and think about it.
What would she run for? Congress, maybe?
I don't know. She's run before. She ran for Congress downstate. She has, I think she has a public service heart. I think she was a great candidate. And I hope she stays involved. Republicans need more diversity and more people like her.
You know, I do want to say, I know that there wasn't a lot of drama in JB winning yesterday. It was sort of an expected outcome. But I do think he deserves credit for having the discipline when he got in this race. He decided what he was going to do. Yes, he put his money where his mouth is. He was disciplined on his message, and he went after it, and he put it together. And I think...
Well, tell me what his message was, outside of Rauner sucks.
Well, that Illinois needs to change. I mean, and then when you're running against an incumbent, that's pretty much what you have to do. All I'm saying is that a lot of times wealthy candidates get in, people who've never run before, they think it's kind of a vanity project. They don't really put the apparatus together. He put together a good campaign.
Oh, I have no doubt he wants the job.
He did it the right way, is what I guess is what I'm saying.
I think he absolutely wanted the job, but I don't think he could have done it without a lot of money. I don't think he needed to spend $180 million.
I think it was like $170.
Oh, well, why am I exaggerating?
You think he could have done it for $140?
I think he could have done it for $140. Why was Rauner caught in running what I consider to be a pretty bad campaign? Which, by the way, I told him.
I think was more what Eric touched on, that Team JB basically stepped on his throat and never let him up. So I don't think he ever got an opportunity to talk about any of the successes he had. And he has. I think the operations of state government run much better from some of the things he did. But Pritzker outspent him 3-1. I'm not saying that whining. He did, and he really ran some very effective ads. And I agree with Eric. He was very disciplined on message.
So, Eric, what good is going to come out of a lock, stock, and barrel Democrat control of Illinois with no checks?
Well, they own it. They're responsible now. I mean, I think we saw the outcome of the Republicans being in charge nationally, that the country said they weren't happy with the direction for the most part. But, you know, I think they have to come up with solutions now. And I think that's going to be incumbent on Governor-elect Pritzker and Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton.
Is this Madigan's last stand? Or is this going to be like Glenn Close? We thought he was dead in the bathtub and then he sits up.
I mean, look, I know you're not a fan, but just...
Boy,
just,
I don't know how you got that idea.
But let's just step back for a second.
Uh-huh.
Come on.
All right, I'll step back.
Step back for a second. So 4 years ago, Bruce Rauner put a target on this guy's back. And he spent tens of millions of dollars to basically take him out. And where are we sitting here today 4 years later?
Madigan won.
One big.
You're exactly right.
We're back to 2008.
Again, just put aside the like, whether it's good or it's bad or whatever, like... He won.
There's no question he won. But politically and real world stuff, I think, are different. And it is about me and it's not about me. So let me make it not about me. I think, and I'm concerned about J.B. Pritzker for this as well. I think Madigan, Pritzker, and all elected officials need to answer to the public. And when they refuse to do, and I know you feel this way.
I don't disagree with any of that.
Yeah.
You know that. So, I'm just making the broader.
But from a political standpoint,
years from now, when you look back, you're like, wow, that guy.
He absolutely won.
Yeah. He's the last boss in the country. There's nobody else left like
him. Last state boss, without a doubt. Pat, how do you feel about the real-world scenario that Illinois is in?
You mean politically?
Yeah.
As a Republican, we probably have some soul-searching to do. I believe that the party needs to wake up and start putting candidates that we put up that appeal to a bigger tent with this far-right Dick Uline from Uline, this Dick Uline guy from Uline Products, doesn't even live here, lives in Wisconsin, who dumps millions into these stupid races to support. This is a guy that gave Roy Moore $50,000 after it came out that Roy Moore, the Senate candidate in Alabama, was chasing 14-year-old girls around the mall.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is what Dick Uline does, and he dumps money through his surrogates down here, millions and millions of dollars, to put these fringe candidates up that create huge problems. in the general election, and we have to decide as a party whether or not we're going to be a party that can actually win. I don't want to be in a debating society. I want to put candidates up and talk about issues that get Republicans elected.
Pat, a week ago we were saying McCann was likely to get 5%, which then meant there would be a conservative party line.
Thank
on ballots.
God he didn't.
So is he's below 5?
Yeah, he got Sam McCann, the senator from downstate, yeah, the governor got in a big battle with, ran as on the quote-unquote conservative party ticket. When this is the brilliance of the speaker, operating engineers 150 funded him. So if he had gotten 5%, that would have been a viable party in the state, meaning you don't have the petition or the signature requirement. So we would have had every time a conservative party candidate, which would have messed with Republicans terribly.
Lipinski went easy, but am I wrong to be disturbed about the fact that the candidate who claimed the Holocaust is a fraud and never happened got 25% of the vote?
You know, that he's not just a neo-Nazi, he claims he's a Nazi. Mm-hmm. Arthur Jones. Then
but Arthur Jones, and I don't give a guy any
pop. No, here's the reason I want to say his name, because in that third district out there, I don't think people voted for him. They didn't know. They just voted Republican.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it straight Republican?
No, I think it's straight Republican, because that's you know people.
So he's a throwback Nazi, not just a neo-Nazi?
No, he says that. He goes, I'm not a neo-Nazi. I'm a real Nazi. No, he said it with pride. I go, this guy is whacked.
He's got the original jersey.
I'm like, yeah, exactly.
It's not even funny.
I think it's terrible. 25% of the vote I saw.
Yeah, that's exactly
what my point, Arthur Jones, if you live in that district in the southwest suburbs here, do not sign his petitions.
Don't let him in your yard.
Yeah.
We got to talk about the national stuff before we run out of time. We'll do it next.
And I told him that sincerely, I would be rooting for him to do an exceptional job as attorney general, because all of the issues that we talked about during the course of this campaign, we need an attorney general who will be able to take the politics out of the office and to be able to bring all of us together.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Erica Harold's concession speech last night. All right, so Donald Trump, a win or a loss last night, Pat?
It depends on if you're talking to Donald Trump.
Well, he's always going to
win. He had a win. Historically, midterms, you what, lose 32 in the House. I don't know what the number at 35 or whatever. And we won a lot in the Senate, but there's storm clouds on the horizon, and he killed us here in Illinois.
Win or a loss for Trump?
I think it's a mixed bag for everybody.
Split verdict.
And look, the broader issue is, I think it's just a reinforcement of how polarized we are right now. I mean, we are two countries. Pat and I were talking, this is like
Civil War.
It's like 1848. Suburbs and cities and coasts have one very strong point of view, and rural, the rest of the country has a very strong point of view, and everybody's digging in. And that's a scary, scary proposition.
115 million people voted last night, which means more than 100 million didn't. What do we do about that?
115 is an awful lot for a midterm. So
yeah, but the fact that we had to say for a midterm again, still. I mean, I know it's a whole culture shift to make that change.
I think we talked about it several times, like the internet. You gotta let people vote online.
Keep making it easier.
Yeah.
I mean, you can send billions of dollars online. You can do things, you know, you don't have to go on a particular day. I know we're doing that more early voting, and I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing more participation. And states that have, you know, automatic mail-in and all that kind of stuff, you have greater rates of participation.
Same-day registration.
Let people do it online. You can't tell me there's not a way to do that securely if you can do banking,
every dollar,
huge financial transactions.
Every dollar in the world's moved digitally.
That's, you know, right. My daughter's in school in California, and she didn't do her absentees. So I called her up Monday and said, you do not have a home if you don't vote. So she goes, she calls me, she's almost in tears. She's like, Dad, I can do same-day registration in California. So she voted. Yeah. Actually, I sent her, Erica Harold did a video for me saying thanks to my kids for all voting. I go, Kelly, why didn't you vote?
Oh, nice.
That's funny. That's funny.
Can I just say, I think Erica Harold was immensely gracious last night.
She's a good person. She really is.
And I think you learn a lot about somebody when they don't have their best day. And I think she showed a lot of character last night.
And views can evolve. An individual. So, you know, the idea that we judge somebody on what they said at one point in their life isn't entirely fair.
President Trump could learn something from her grace.
A lot.
Her grace.
A lot. Speaking of President Trump, the Democrats are going to have a massive amount of control instantaneously. I've shifted on Pelosi. As much as I think Pelosi is bad for the Democrats, I don't know that there's even anybody remotely close to a better choice to go back as Speaker to do that job.
The numbers, she might have problems. There's a lot of progressives in that caucus now that may not.
There are.
And young people.
I think it's going to be very, very hard to take her on under this under these circumstances. You know, it's, again, it's sort of like, well, yeah, in a perfect world, maybe we should make a change, but we're at war. And when you're at war, you take your wartime general, and you want him on the field.
I agree. But you know what? From a Republican perspective, yeah, Nancy Pelosi coming back. You know what? And Hillary's back on the speaking tour. Man, is that good?
God, dude, look so pleased. Look how excited. I've seen Brady excited. This excited since.
It's been forever.
I might buy a ticket now.
Is Chuck Schumer a bigger problem for the Dems?
I don't think so. I mean, the Senate will be the battleground, obviously, besides the presidency in 2020. The number 30 seats up, you know, if you break down those states.
And it's winnable.
It's very winnable.
So. But Lindsey Graham said last night, the judiciary train keeps a moving.
It does.
So if we get one more Supreme Court pick.
Yeah,
that's a big thing for
Lindsey Graham's biggest problem is McCain will be haunting him, and rightfully so, going forward.
Man, did he take a dive to the dark
Unbelievable.
Side.
Thanks to both of you. We'll take this up next week. And what I'd like to discuss with you guys next week is what happens with the impeachment thing. Do the Democrats push forward or not next week?
That might have hurt Beto, I think.
The impeachment piece.
Yeah.
I think what hurt Beto's reality show is dropping an F-bomb on national TV during his concession speech.
Thanks, Steve.
Nice to see you. And get some sleep, both of you, but not in the same room. Let's take a break for this. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where Steve will be next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me good.
High-level meetings going on this week for New Year's Eve.
Ooh.
Where Dean Richards will appear live on the Steve Cochran New Year's Eve wing ding doodle.
You were able to secure Dean Richards?
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yep. We've talked to all of his people. Allegedly. And that took a while because we had to go through Greektown.
Fired everybody, allegedly.
I can't wait till we see Dean Richards' rider for the New Year's Eve green room situation.
Oh, it's not good. It's not good. The demands are through the roof. Mariah Carey called Dean and said, how'd you back off a little bit? Be glad they asked.
You're such a diva. Hey, you know, I could really add something to the show this year because, as you know, on my special Tree Time broadcast that we're doing at in Lake Barrington this Sunday, I'm going to be shooting an apple off of my newsman Dave Schwann's head with a bow and arrow.
We have to videotape that.
Well, I think I would like to do it like Facebook Live or Instagram.
Yeah, but we need video to run on New Year's Eve after you kill Schwann.
Yeah, the state's attorney is going to want evidence, depending on what happens.
Oh, I'll testify on your behalf, regardless of the damage you do.
But. Actually, you know, while I was waiting to come on with you here, I'm shopping for a bow and arrow, because I know you'll find it hard to believe I don't own one.
It is a shock.
Even though it turns out, this is how this all started. I discovered that I'm actually kind of good at archery, and Schwann didn't believe me, so this is...
So therefore, he has to be killed.
This is going to shoot an apple off of his head.
How dare he question you.
So maybe on the New Year's show... I could shoot an apple off of your head.
I'm thinking John DeCoss. Or possibly Rocky.
I think that Dean should shoot an apple off all your heads, and then you can do some analytics on if the size of the person's head affected your aim to the apple.
It really isn't fair to the other guys because of the size of my head. Apple will be smaller.
I was going to say, let's just ask who has the head most likely to hold a good Honeycrisp apple on it.
Actually, you're going to do apples on their heads and a pumpkin on mine. So
be easier to hit.
Yeah. I have an apple. How big the apple is?
Yeah.
Well, Honeycrisp apples are huge.
They are. You can get really big.
Biggest apple. Yeah, you can get it's like softball size. Honeycrisp.
Maybe you should do a pumpkin instead.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'll put it on my head because I could balance it.
All right. Now I'm looking at the Bear Archery Scout Youth Compound Bow Package, $23.99.
That's not bad. Definitely when you're risking a friend's life, you want to go cheap on the bow and arrow.
My son has a hunting bow and arrow. I bet you he'd let you borrow it.
Could I borrow it?
I bet he would.
Plus, that was like super powered.
Yeah,
you could do some real damage.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. I would love that.
Now that the election's over, starting tomorrow, we'll actually have some real time for returning to all the glory of Moron Entertainment. But today, we're still pressed for time. Yeah, you have an election comedy coming up.
Well, a lot of the late night shows were were on live last night. So Colbert, Kimmel.
Oh, I thought it was a movie. You have election comedy.
This is election comedy.
Got
these are the late night guys. Comedy made fresh for the election results that were coming in last.
Sniff that comedy. Okay, ready? Roll it.
All day it felt like today, like America was in the doctor's office waiting for our STD results to come back.
The Democrats have taken control of half of one of the three branches of government. All the GOP has is the other half of Congress, the Supreme Court, and a president who does whatever he wants.
You know, the way we vote is so interesting from a technology standpoint. I was thinking about it today. Most of us use a highly advanced smartphone to learn about the candidates, to locate our polling places. We use an app to call an Uber, to navigate through traffic and drive us right to the door in the most efficient way possible. And then we fill out a Scantron in an old lady's garage. And they give you a sticker. People do love those stickers. Oh, everyone's very proud of their stickers.
They love a good sticker. Everybody loves stickers.
He's not wrong. It's completely crazy that in 2018, we vote by filling out little dots like it's a test you and I took in school in 1975.
Right. I find it challenging to, you know, at least in the city anyway, you get a little magic marker kind of pen. And you connect the dots.
Yeah.
You do connect the lines.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is there's different systems in every part of the state.
Yep.
That's crazy. It's crazy.
I think if my bank account can handle high finance, that we should be able to do this somehow electronically without being tapped.
Here's the weird part, too. My polling place, lovely people, by the way, my polling place, I said, well, I'll try the electronic, and I give them back the paper ballot. I go on to the electronic, and before I could actually vote, I had to play Pong. It was like 15 minutes of Pong to qualify to vote.
Dean, were there a lot of pizza boxes around the newsroom this morning?
No, it was spotless around here this morning.
Wow.
Spotless. I was shocked. We on the morning show look forward to the morning after the election because there's always a lot of leftover food, but
good God, you're all handsomely compensated. Why are you eating food from last night?
They bring food in on election night.
Yeah, but it's last night's food.
It's okay.
Can't all be refrigerated.
Cold pizza's good.
It's just sad.
I'm going to kill you.
Ridiculous. I'm dunking a piece of cold pizza in a cup of coffee right now.
Well, that's what I expect from you.
Being such a baby.
Yeah, you're right. I'm the problem. Thank you, buddy.
See you tomorrow.
That's Dean, and more from him tomorrow on More on Entertainment.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Back on the Steve Cochran Show. It's 8:21. We're going to have Christmas Pete with us in just a second. He's with us now. Hope the election show last night went well.
Went terrific.
Okay, good. Good. I didn't mean to throw you off with the tough questions first.
Justin was wearing his suit, I saw, and in a very colorful tie.
Yeah, it was actually Miles' tie.
Oh.
He was wearing his son.
It's a special part of bonding when you can start to borrow your kids' clothes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised that Miles has the higher fashion sense in the family.
Just had a Christmas peek because there's no other chance I'll have to tell you this. You're showering wrong.
Oh, yeah. There's
a
study out.
He didn't
hear the study earlier. I'm disagreeing that I'm showering correctly.
I was like, what do you know that I don't know? Because I didn't shower this morning.
Rajani Kata is a clinical professor of dermatology at the University of Texas Health in Houston and author of Glow, the Dermatologist's Guide to a Younger Skin Diet. Generally speaking, you don't need to soap all of your body that you've gotten really sweaty. A thorough lathering isn't going to hurt you exactly, but soap and water strip away the skin's natural oils, drying it out, causing irritation, discomfort, sometimes even infection. So, make a note of this. Soap should go under your arms, around your important parts, and wherever there's a skin fold. Now, granted, some of us have more folds than others, because that's where the bacteria is.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's water cascading down your body, soaping the upper half of your body will take care of the lower half, except for your important parts.
Mm-hmm.
So, why can't you just wash everything and then, like, put lotion on to moisturize?
Well, why would you go
like
down
I never rub? Stuff? I never rub the back of my calves. I don't use the loofah there because I know they're getting their soap from my hair. They're getting the soap from my body.
I'm just telling you what a doctor says about the way you people are showering.
Yeah.
If the water is too cold or too warm, the cells and lipids that make up your skin barrier can develop reactions. Let too warm water blast you in the forearm for a minute. If it turns red, it's too hot.
Oh, my God. If you can't figure out the temperature and you need this test, you've got a problem.
Well, we all obviously have very different ways of showering. And I'm telling you now, lukewarm water is better. And also limit your shower to no more than 10 minutes, 15 at the max. The idea is, Pete, make a note of this, cleanse. Mm-hmm. Don't antagonize your skin.
I prefer baths anyway.
Me too. I'm with you, Pete.
You know how many grown men I know who take a bath?
I know
you.
I know one other person, Dan Filato.
How many showers do you take in a day?
What? Well, I take one unless I'm, rather sweaty.
Okay, but you don't take one in the morning.
No, I take a shower.
See, that's the first thing I do in the morning.
Yeah.
And then I take another one later after I work out.
Dave, maybe all aggressive with the shower.
Yeah, I mean, really? Come on.
You seem to be taking this whole shower thing personally.
Well,
when I'm just trying to help.
It seems to be a commentary on our lifestyle, you know?
Dave, I'm just trying to help. You know, if you can't accept notes on your performance, then we have other issues.
Okay.
Christmas Pete.
Christmas Pete time.
I've got Christmas on my mind.
For those of you unfamiliar, Pete is Christmas crazy. And it's just Christmas crazy, both have C's. He is here to tell you a little bit about Christmas and things you should make a note of for Christmas, but also to give you a chance to win a $100 gift certificate from Tree Time.
With the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees and unique decorations anywhere.
And again, Dean will be there live on Sunday morning starting at 9. Do you have a question?
I have a question.
Okay.
In the Strike episode of Seinfeld, season 9, episode 10, original air date December 18th, 1997, George's father, Frank, creates a new holiday called Festivus.
Yes, he did.
Because he hated the commercial and religious aspects of Christmas.
Yes, he did.
What gift was Frank trying to purchase when he realized that there had to be a better way to celebrate the holiday?
That's a great question, because I thought you were going to go with the feats of strength or possibly the airing of grievances. Mm-hmm. But no, you went with the gift.
What gift?
Wow. Good question.
Was Frank trying to purchase?
312-981-7200. First correct answer for Joe, who was born just after Seinfeld was canceled. Joe will tell you if you're a big winner. What do they win again? $100 gift certificate to Tree Time.
Yes. Everything Christmas at Tree Time on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington.
Christmas music you're recommending?
Christmas music is a record by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. It's a 2015 record from there. It's a holiday soul party. I think we have a little taste.
So let me hear it. Holiday soul party, you say? I think she'll sing here right about now.
When I was child, I used to wonder how Santa put my toys under the tree. I said, Mama, can you tell me how this can be when there ain't no chimneys in the project?
That's great.
Yeah.
Love that. Good recommendation.
She's awesome. She, unfortunately, she died back in 2016, but her music lives on.
Yes, well said by you. You got a holiday movie? TV show? Live play?
No, it's a Christmas event.
Performance art?
A holiday event.
A holiday event. Things that you could do this Christmas.
Okay. When you recommended a holiday special, though, as well. Just to make a note for a future Christmas.
I'll put it in for the next one.
All right,
Miss Ricky's is a restaurant inside the Virgin Hotels, and starting today, they will be serving a spaghetti sundae in honor of Elf's 15th anniversary.
The actual Elf spaghetti sundae.
Elf was released November 7th, 2003. It's a Christmas classic. And the spaghetti sundae will feature spaghetti topped with fruity pebbles, chocolate sauce, marshmallows, and more.
I tried to tell Steve that was the actual spaghetti
because
sundae.
I thought they were just going with ice cream that looked like spaghetti, like an artistic ice cream presentation. I couldn't have been more wrong.
Steve Grzanich is very excited.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think we should try. Let's pick some up. We'll have a Cochrane Show taste test.
Absolutely. Bring them over. You're the guy that gave me my first Slurpee. And by the way, that sounds like code, and it's not.
Just put it on my resume.
Yeah, as it should. It's quite a credit. All right, when will we have more Christmas, Pete?
Friday.
Friday. At what time, Sandberg, will Christmas Pete return?
I believe it is at 9:10.
9:10 on Friday morning, more Christmas Pete. The preparation, I guess, has already started.
Oh, I'm sorry. 8:40, for those of you who want to tune in.
I'll be here.
Yeah, 9:10. 8:40 is actually mountain time. Let's go to Ray in Tinley Park. Ray, you heard the question. What was the gift? Okay, Ray, you heard the question. What was the gift?
Oh, the gift was a doll.
Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son. I reached for the last one they had, but so did another man. As I rained blows upon him, I realized there had to be another way.
What happened to the doll?
It was destroyed. But out of that, a new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
So good. Just so good.
All right, well, he's
got that was a great episode.
So good, Ray.
He's getting the $100 gift card to Tree Time with the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees and unique decorations anywhere.
And I think you can get a poll there, Ray.
Well, that's fantastic. A Festivus poll.
Yes,
for
that's exactly right. Hold on. Thank you, Pete.
You're welcome.
Christmas Pete. Up working on little sleep. Back with the headlines in a moment, and Senator Durbin will join us. It is 8:37. Senator Durbin joins us live in studio. I appreciate you being in here, and it's been a very busy time. I don't know how you must feel this morning, because it was a great night for the Democrats in Illinois. It was a very good night for the Democrats in regards to retaking the House. But your home turf, the Senate, not so great.
No, it really wasn't, Steve. I lost some real friends. Heidi Heitkamp,
yeah.
Claire McCaskill, Joe Donnelly, Bill Nelson. I mean, these are folks that I've come not only to serve with, but really like and in some ways love. Because you look at Heidi Heitkamp here from North Dakota.
Gutsy lady.
She really, really is. And there was that moment when she, after Kavanaugh's hearing, there was a group of us of about 20. And we were meeting in private. And she said, I believe her. I don't believe him. I'm voting against him. And it'll probably cost me the election.
Right.
There were tears in her eyes, and she wasn't the only one in the room with tears in her eyes.
But we need more people who are willing to stand up in Congress with tears in their eyes and say, I may lose the job, but I got to look at my grandkids or my kids and look at myself in the mirror tomorrow.
Exactly. And we, you know, we celebrate those people because, unfortunately, they're rare in mm-hmm. history. But we shouldn't forget them. I mean, she put it all on the line
right.
in a state where she was campaigning her heart out and knew exactly what that vote was going to
be. Let's go in reverse order here, starting with, you know, again, Washington before we get to Illinois. Because the Democrats will control the House, is it a big deal that you lost a couple of seats in the Senate? I mean, it's a big deal going to 20. It's a big deal strategically with all that. But is it a big deal legislatively in 2019?
You know, there's some very few marginal votes where one or two, three Republicans can make a difference. But, you know, we've lost Corker. We've lost Flake.
Right.
We're down to basically Collins and Murkowski, mm-hmm. who are the two senators who from time to time will join us. You know, now that's not enough. And it means that if Mitch McConnell chooses to push through things on a partisan basis, it's very tough for us to stop him. On the other hand, there's another chamber. And with the House of Representatives under Democratic control, he has to take that into his calculation.
Yeah, Schoolhouse Rock, kids. Go back and watch it if you forgot. Since legislation can start in either body, is the House more likely to listen to the Senate in a real world, or do we live in a world now where there's so much partisanship that's gone on that, you know, the House doesn't care what the Senate does and vice versa?
Well, I listened last night as much as I could between watching the results to what Nancy Pelosi had to say. And I thought one of the things, if she continues to be the leader or whoever the Democratic leader may be, was this effort, we're going to reach out to the other side. Now, it's tougher because what's left of the other side, minus some 26 members, is much more strident and hardcore when it comes to their political beliefs. But I really think that's what America is looking for. As I said, if we take control of a chamber, in this case the House, America doesn't want us to get mad, get even. They want us to get something done.
Yeah, how about that?
And the first thing they want us to do is to say to the folks across the aisle, will you join us? Can
right.
we do this together?
Right.
And I think that is a way. Excuse my phone here. Some
it's all right.
late results coming in here.
if it's Trump, take it.
But, you know, I think that is exactly what they should do. And I hope that Mitch McConnell will do the same.
You've gotten to know this president a bit over the last couple of years, and you certainly have his ear in the position of power that you have. Any chance, and I feel like I know the answer to this, any chance he's going to change and do the right thing, in quotes, going forward, considering the fact that there's now a check on his power?
Absolutely no indication of that at all.
Right.
At all. And I've sat next to him, as you probably might have caught on one of your on the TV coverage, sat next to him discussing the hottest issue of the day, immigration, heard him say, send me a bipartisan bill and I'll take the heat and I'll sign it. 48 hours later, he just cut the legs out from under us. He just is not a person that you can deal with in terms of compromise. Maybe that will change as he faces re-election, maybe, but it's a long shot.
As you know, because you and I are both old enough to remember 1974, impeachment is a horrible thing for the country. It's horrible.
There's a reason why that organization was called Move On, because they were basically saying America wants you to move on from the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And I still think that's the case. They're not looking for us, as I said, to settle a score here with the Democratic House. They're looking for us to get something done that improves the lives of families across America.
So with politics being what it is and the real world being what we need to focus on, getting things done, things of that nature, do you have any sense of what the House is going to do here? Because at the bare minimum, we wait for Bob Mueller's report. The investigations that the House should have handled and should have handled more honestly, I think certainly have a right to go forward. But at some point, there's going to be pressure to say it's time to roll the impeachment dice here because he's not fit for office.
Steve, I don't see that. And I'll tell you why. The Constitution really defines the parameters here. The House, by majority vote, can impeach. True. But in order to convict for impeachment,
you have to have the Senate.
67 votes in the Senate. That's not going to happen.
So based on that, would the House not make that political play?
I certainly would advise them not to. But having said that, here's what I think is likely to transpire. And here's just Durbin's guess. It's the best I can give you. I think that Mueller held back until after the election to announce what he's going to do. And that really follows a standard, a tradition in the Department of Justice, which said before Comey, said in the last 60 days, don't muck it up with some announcement of an indictment.
Yeah. Right.
And I think Mueller respected that tradition. That means that starting today, November 7th, he is free to conclude and to announce what he's concluded. And that could lead, I hope it doesn't, for the good of this nation, to a real constitutional showdown.
What's the process like, people you were working with on committees and things that no longer weren't reelected? Does the person that took over for them that won the election, do they automatically get placed on these committees to fill those spots?
First thing that happens is there's this elaborate calculation of the percentage. So one seat, two seats in the Senate could mean a difference of one person on a committee. So you take the percentage based on the election result, the final tally in the Senate, and then you apply it to the membership of the committee. Currently, the Senate Judiciary Committee has a majority of one Republican over Democrats, 11 to 10. With these results, it's likely to be 12 to 9 or something of that nature. It may be 13 to 8. I don't know. It depends on the final count on the final.
But it's a good question, because Heidi Heitkamp is an example. She would no longer be on committee and serving with you on that particular thing. But that doesn't mean her opponent that won gets that chair necessarily.
No. And in fact, it's kind of a jump ball in terms of where the vacancies may be. For example, one of the things that I'm really focused on, and she is too, is Tammy Duckworth on our Armed Services Committee. Can you think of
a better, more
important assignment? She didn't make it in the first round, and we are hoping that there'll be a vacancy there, even with a reduced number in the Senate, so that she can be on that committee. She'd be a valuable asset.
The statewide stuff was really nothing but good news for Democrats. We talked off the air about Lauren Underwood, who I think is a great story, but there were a couple of races, Lauren Underwood being one of them, that people consider major upsets. I don't think a lot of people thought, for instance, that Kasten would necessarily win. What do the Democrats do with this power in state now, including, obviously, governor?
Let me say quickly about both of those candidates. Sean Kasten over Peter Roskam was a historic victory in an area which is politically changing. Most people look at that district, and that used to be solid red territory, not so much anymore. It's purple leaning blue in many respects. Lauren Underwood, we talked about her before we came on the air here. She's such an extraordinary person. I talked to her again this morning. I get such a kick out of calling her. And I thanked her because if you listen to her remarks last night, she started off by paying tribute to Randy Holtgren, her opponent.
Yeah.
And a few people in the crowd started booing. She said, stop. You know, this man made a contribution in public service, and I'm glad she did. Right. I may disagree with Randy's votes, and I do. He's a genuinely good person.
Yeah.
It really comes down to that. And the fact that she acknowledged that at the beginning says that there ought to be some civility in this business, even when you're in a position where you could crow. She never did.
Yeah, well, Erica Harold, I thought, made a very similar concession speech in regards to Kwame Raoul, who's the next attorney general, and that's somebody you know well. How do you feel about that, Russ?
Well, I was rooting for Kwame, as you can understand. Sure. I met Erica when she was Miss USA or Miss America.
Miss America?
Miss America. Yeah, Dave voted her in.
Yeah, that's right. Dave got her out of Illinois. Yeah, that's right.
I met her back when, so I've known her, at least of her.
Right.
And she's, you know, she's done some remarkable things, graduating Harvard Law School and so forth.
Impressive lady.
Yeah, she's very impressive. And that was a contest we worried over because we looked at some of the early poll numbers, and being an African-American woman in this context, in this environment, was a positive thing for her. Kwame, though, I think has done an amazing job in Springfield. When the single toughest jobs were assigned in the Senate Judiciary Committee in Springfield, they went to Kwame time and again. And it says something, that they trusted his judgment, and he came up with results regularly. So I think he'll be a good successor to Lisa Madigan.
And the key is, of course, operating independently, especially in that job. Now, as you know, I appreciate all the time you've given me and given this show. And the same goes for Mayor Emanuel. It doesn't come from Mike Madigan, and it hasn't come from J.B. Pritzker. Do you believe that J.B. Pritzker, now that he's elected, will answer more questions publicly than he's done so far?
I think he will, and I don't fault him for not giving chapter and verse and specifics. He has stated that he wants a progressive state income tax. That is not an easy ask. It's not a given that Mike Madigan or John Cullerton can put the votes together to support that. Well, it remains to be seen. But he understands, and I think we all do, we're facing challenges in this state that are unprecedented. And they're not just the creation of the last governor or the members of the General Assembly. They go back a generation or more in the pension situation, the constitutional provisions, and all the things that are tied up with it. I've talked to JB at length about this. He's a very serious-minded person. He's looking for real experts to sit down and give him advice. And he knows that many of the suggestions are not going to be politically popular. But a leader has to step up, and I think he's prepared to.
Is he prepared to step up and stand against Madigan if Madigan wants something that he doesn't?
Well, I would put it this way, Steve. Governors of both political parties have found that Mike Madigan is a challenge because he is entrenched, he is experienced, he usually knows more about an issue than his opponents, and he has a strong following in the House. But they found ways to work with him. I think that J.B. Pritzker will do the same.
Now, we have less than a minute here. Your party needs a message. It needs a message, and it needs a candidate for 2020 and all of those big picture things. But the Senate looks like it's winnable in 2020. You're up in 2020. Are you definitely in?
Let me tell you this. I'm preparing for a re-election run. I haven't made a final decision or announcement.
Leaning one way or the other?
I am leaning toward running.
Okay.
And I've covered the state. I've traveled the state during this campaign like my name was on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
I have stronger support in many areas of the state than I've ever had before. And I'll make a decision soon.
All right. You'll call me immediately.
I'll call you.
In dealing in the political climate that we're in right now, where things can get frustrating, when you get to the point of frustration where you just want to, is it more motivating or does it make you want to step away?
Well, I've got some things I want to do. You know, I feel very strongly about DACA and the DREAM Act. That was my legislation, and there are a lot of lives hanging in the balance. I felt very strongly about medical research. We have accomplished something remarkable. 5% real growth in medical research for 4 straight years with a bipartisan coalition that's getting it done. And I want to do something about criminal sentencing reform. I think that is fundamental to justice in this country. So those are the 3 national issues that motivate me.
Congratulations on Illinois. Please keep working towards returning those kids to their parents, no matter what country they're in.
I think
that's just an awful story, and it remains that even the day after Election Day. And please mention to Governor Pritzker that he has an open invitation to join us.
I'll tell him to come up and see this beautiful studio.
Right. He doesn't have to like me. He can like the view. Nice to see you. Thank you for the time.
Thanks, Steve.
I'm going to miss that laugh. On Monday, I did a podcast with Doc Emmerich, the only person that I would go to for play-by-play for my kid's birthday party, if I had one, was Dave Editor Doc Emmerich.
Thank you, and I would do it, too.
I know you would. But the fact of the matter is, in that podcast, Doc Emmerich and I probably spend 5 minutes going on and on about how great Q is. And you know why? Because he is. A phenomenal coach, second in all-time wins, and in a town that is as good a sports town or better than any in the world, he brought us pride, championship pride, 3 times in 10 years. Made the Blackhawks something that everybody craved every single day. He's not going to be forgotten. He is valued by the Blackhawks organization at the highest of levels. He is the good guy you heard. And on the ice and off the ice. And I wish him nothing but the best, and I know you do as well.
Absolutely. And look, there, we come across people in this business who you know that they are destined for the Hall of Fame down the road. And you get the privilege to get to know them a little bit and cover them. And there aren't that many guys in that level, that caliber, that you're fortunate enough to rub shoulders with.
You think about it, he came here, I think he'd been coaching, 10, 11, 12 years when he came here. That's a long time, but he comes here at a point where his career could have been headed in a different direction, and all he did was win.
Yeah.
You know, because you take Kane and Taves at the age he inherited them, you develop those guys as players, obviously Seabrook and Keith, younger guys then as well. One of the arguments you're going to hear and have heard for the last 24 to 48 hours is, well, why not Stan? Stan's a guy that had to pick the players. Maybe Joel didn't have the right players. Maybe Stan picked the wrong players. I believe what I heard in the press conference yesterday from folks I've spoken to, that the issue was not in any way, shape, or form between Stan and Q. It's that the organization decided they had to make a change to win this season. And as crazy as it may sound to Hawks fans, and as tough a decision as that is, Rocky Wirtz yesterday in the press conference said, you got to make tough decisions, and you got to make decisions. And they did.
Look, go back to the hiring at Quenneville in the first place. They had fired Dennis Savard.
Yeah.
And I remember the reaction at the time.
Vicious.
Fans were up in arms. They thought, how can you fire Dennis Savard 4 games into a season?
Right.
But he's been very much, he's probably more a part of the Blackhawks now than he was then.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So
They've made the vast, vast, vast majority of decisions made by the Hawks organization have been the right ones. This may well turn out to be another one of the right ones, and I certainly hope it is. I do know this, and this isn't violating any confidences. There are a lot of handshakes and well wishes yesterday when Coach Q left the building. He's a classy guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I hope he and his family enjoy some time together. He certainly can afford a ski trip or two to Colorado. And as you said yesterday, Sandberg, that's probably where he's going to go.
Oh, I think so. He's on a plane probably right now, headed down vacay, enjoying life.
And tomorrow night, are they home tomorrow night?
They are home.
Yeah, tomorrow
against
night,
Carolina.
When Coach Colleton is introduced for the first time, I hope fans will save their booze for another point in the evening if you choose to. He'll be on the show with us tomorrow, and he deserves the shot that he's been given to put a winner on the ice.
He'll be on the show tomorrow with us at 8:40. And my husband did a bunch of interviews with him last year when the Ice Hogs were doing well, and he came back and said, that guy's going to be a great NHL head coach.
Yeah.
He didn't know at the time it would be for the Blackhawks, but very excited about Jeremy Colleton. And
David Hochberg did, too. Remember, he was
our Ice Hogs insider.
Playoffs.
Yes.
I think our fans they're good fans, and they know good hockey, and I think they're going to be warm to Jeremy.
Oh, I think so. I hope so. I certainly hope that's the case. And, just in the very 2018 way, you're entitled to be upset.
Mm-hmm.
You're entitled to your feelings. But also, I'd ask you to take a step back and tell me how many terrible decisions the Blackhawks have made in 10 years. You probably couldn't give me a handful.
And can we thank Sweet Alley's gluten-free bakery?
Yeah, what is that about?
Sweet Alley's just dropped off a ton of gluten-free baked goods. And I'll decide if you're nice to me, I might give you some. If not, I'm keeping them all for myself. but you can go to sweetallies.com.
Well, as you know, I like gluten because it's the stuff that, you know, I shouldn't have. And Ross, if you're listening, come on by.
Yeah, this lemon blueberry pancake, amazing.
Sandberg, you just had a procedure yesterday.
I ate like 4 hours stuff? After I had my tooth pulled.
I think it's very risky, and I think you should leave it all for Steve Grzanich.
Yeah.
Well, sure, absolutely.
Well, this is definitely Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
It is 9:13. We continue. Steve Cochran Show, number 1,257. I forgot to mention this to Senator Durbin. That's 1,257 consecutive no-shows by Mike Madigan. And we could start a new count with J.B. Pritzker because Sandberg loves when I count that. But the governor's welcome, as is everybody that wants to talk about how to make the state better.
It's a new era in Illinois politics right now, and I'm going to ask you to play nice.
I think I have so far.
Okay. Let's just invite and not remind him that he hasn't been on.
Okay. At Cochran Show on Twitter, Facebook.com, Steve Cochran Show, Steve Cochran on Instagram, and, Friendster and MySpace. You got to look that up. At 9:13, I just met Nick Kratzer, but I couldn't be more proud of him. So on behalf of my friends Kevin and Sam and Peggy and my brother Mickey, who's celebrating 15 years of sobriety, Maureen, you're doing nice work. 4 years sober.
Coming up on 4 years. February 6th will be four.
You'll never forget that day, will you?
Never. Just like the day I shipped out the boot.
You were injured originally where and how?
So it was a training accident. I wound up, we were doing a out in the field for an extensive period of time. Kind of freak accident. Rolled my ankle on a rock. Twisted my knee when I went down. Kind of tore everything. So had two surgeries while I was still in. After I was med boarded out, I had another two. And I mean, from that first operation when they gave me the opiates, it kind of grabbed a hold of me.
The addiction's fairly fast then, right?
It was for me.
How bad did it get?
It started, always been into alcohol, used to do the lighter stuff. But once
drinking and high-test painkillers, generally not a great idea.
It's not, but it was that was my life for the better part of 10 years.
How close did you come to dying?
I attempted suicide once, and right before I got clean, I overdosed, actually in my dad's arms on his birthday.
Wow. The question, I know you know this, but for people listening, the questions aren't intended to be harsh. It's just people need to understand that you have to get to a position where you want to save your own life before you can do it.
That couldn't be so more true. We can't keep sweeping this epidemic under the rug. We need to scream it from the rooftops.
You're here with Dr. Caitlin Simpson, Director of Clinical Operations where?
With Footprints to Recovery.
And what is Footprints to Recovery? Lean into that microphone for me. What is Footprints to Recovery?
Footprints to Recovery is a nationwide group of addiction treatment centers. We currently have five locations, a detox facility in Mesa, Arizona, and four outpatient facilities in Hamilton, New Jersey, Wayne, Pennsylvania, Centennial, Colorado, and Arlington Heights, Illinois.
And one of the reasons you go around the country is not just to talk about those particular things, but it's day after the election. Mm-hmm. My words, not yours, to encourage the cowards that we have in Congress to stand up and fight this for what it is, maybe the greatest scourge in this country, the opiates problem.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And the stigma that still exists with regards to addiction is unbelievably prevalent. And that's one of the things that is one of the biggest barriers that we face in helping people access services.
Well, that's interesting, too, because, Nick, you're a man's man, United States Marine. You find out that this thing's got power over you. I assume that's one of the reasons it took you longer to ask for help.
It did. It was... Honestly, when I was in the addiction, it that wasn't even a thought.
Because even if it was bad, you probably thought you could beat it on your own, right?
I did for a long time. If I only had enough money, if I only had enough, painkillers or alcohol, I'd be fine. And I just really never looked at the underlying issues.
We talked about the fact that you talked about taking your own life. It's usually a long time before that. I think the average doctor, you can correct me on this, the average number of times an addict tries to recover, I believe, is seven before it clicks in, and that's the average. So early on, when you realized you were in trouble, I assume you went down that road a few times. I can fix this. I can do this. And a couple days later, you're right back in.
Oh, without fail. It was, substitution for a few days, try to get off the opiates, and then right back. You know, I could do it only on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, as long as I don't do it every day. And then Tuesday came around, and it's like, well, I could cheat a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Samber?
With the addiction to the opioids, were you still in a lot of physical pain?
I was, but it also enhanced that pain. So taking more opiates allowed me to do more activities, which caused me more pain.
Okay.
What is the high? You know, and I say this from, I'm king of the codependents. I mentioned my brother. I'm the guy that would give him money. I'm the guy that would, you know, try to make sure he was alive and make him feel better. There's no win in that. That's not something to be as a badge of honor. You're making the problem worse. And it took me a long time to realize that. But having never been there, what is the high that kept you going back, aside from the pain relief?
At that point, it was the fear of getting sick. You know, opiate withdrawal is, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
It's worst, like, thing you ever went through.
Worst thing I ever went through. You know, it feels like the flu times a million, and it's like you just can't focus, and it's the only thing you can think about is getting more to feel normal. It wasn't even about getting high anymore.
That's a testament to the power of the drug, right? Because you know how bad that feels, and you still end up going back.
That's the definition of insanity,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what I was stuck in. That's what, you know, everybody gets stuck in for whatever length of time that they're using for. It's just that nothing matters. You know, I used to steal from my sister and then help her look for it. You know, that's the type of person I was. You know, it just, nothing else mattered except getting what I needed to get in order to function so that I can go and get more.
Dr. Simpson, the pharmaceutical companies, Senator Durbin, I should say, was talking about this. The pharmaceutical companies are coming around to some extent. But listen, I take prescription medication. Prescription meds are very important in the world. But the opiate abuse in this country can be largely followed. You can follow the money trail. So the pharmaceutical companies are stepping up to some extent, even if it's just a set of lawsuits to try to make their lives a little easier. What sort of fight do we have to put on politically to help beat this back? We have the right people in office, for instance?
I think it's a significant fight. You know, we need to make sure that people are prescribing appropriately and that the medications aren't being prescribed. There was a long time where the opiate prescriptions that were being prescribed was a cash business, and the Suboxone medications for medication-assisted treatment were a cash business, and that all needs to be regulated appropriately. So they put things like the prescription monitoring programs in place to be able to effectively monitor physicians that maybe weren't prescribing appropriately. That all needs to be regulated. It needs to be appropriate, just like any other medication that is being prescribed.
Well, you're a doctor. How much of this do you put on fellow doctors?
I'm sorry, excuse me?
I said you're a doctor. How much of this do you put on fellow doctors for making the problem worse?
I think it's such a layered issue that part of it is the
a lot of blame to go around.
There's a lot of things that went wrong, starting with the overprescribing, starting with the way that, you know, people that are struggling with addictions have been perceived, even tracing to the legal system and putting people in jail for also struggling with an addiction and committing crimes like Nick was talking about. He was stealing from his sister. So we see a lot of people making a lot of decisions in their active addiction that they would never make in sobriety. So now a lot of the legal systems have shifted their perspective and are offering treatment and are supporting those in being able to get well, and are court mandating people to go seek help and get treatment. But there's so many things that need to shift, starting with the stigma, starting with the perception of what addiction is, and really giving good access to care.
From what I understand, what we know about alcohol addiction in particular is some of us are more predisposed than others, because our brains are wired differently. Opioids the same way, or are opioids so powerful they'll just override that?
I think any addiction in general.
Okay.
You know,
but that doesn't mean those of us who aren't wired for it can't get into a huge problem.
Everybody can get into it.
Okay.
At this point, overdose-related deaths is the leading cause of death in the U.S. for people under the age of 50. So we were just talking about that earlier. Think about that. You have more of a chance of possibly dying from an overdose than being hit by a vehicle.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Samber?
I wanted to ask you, Nick, was when you were in the opioid, in the addiction phase early on, did that any of that have to do with the fact that you were no longer in the Marines, you know, doing that because you couldn't physically? So was there an escape portion of that?
There was a lot of, you know, feelings and emotions that I tried to suppress. You know, I felt like I wasn't able to fulfill my duty, you know, for a long time. Like, I let my brothers down. And I know you know, after doing a lot of work on myself, that there was really nothing I could do. It was out of my control. But somewhere in the back of my mind, it was that guilt piece. You know, I let down my father, who's a Marine, and, you know, uncles, and it's like a family business, you know. So it was like, here I am, and I couldn't do my job. So let me get high.
You weren't holding up your end of the bargain.
It's important to that you share your story, and that a lot of people share their stories. You know, just in the last 2 weeks, we've had two young people we knew that died who had issues with substance abuse, and they're all people that, when you look at them, you think, well, that person's not addicted to anything, or they don't have any mental issues.
No,
you
know, 25, Nick is and, 25 and under, dry, yeah, come on.
I know, but Nick is a totally fit, you yeah. know, nice-looking.
Like, handsome devil.
Right.
Well, now. I entered treatment.
Well, don't get cocky. You're not
at 100, at 115 pounds, you know,
is that right?
And that's where it
mm-hmm.
took me. I couldn't care. I could care less about my looks, what mm-hmm. I was wearing, my head, you know, shaved hair because it was easier and it didn't cost me any money.
Right.
Because all I was focused on was getting
that
more.
Was your entire day.
I think the average people that we see coming into treatment are in between the ages of 18 to 26 or 27 years old. The age of onset is specific to opiate use is so much younger these days, and our young generations coming up are so desensitized to what opiate addiction is because it's the kid on the football field, mm-hmm. or it's their friend next door, or it's Johnny's mommy across the street
that started
popping pills.
Yeah.
It's not that person that, you know, you used to see homeless on the corner anymore. It's your neighbor. It's everybody. So it's unbelievably prevalent.
Stick around. A couple more questions for you. And for people that want more information on what you guys do from a clinical basis every day in Arlington Heights or wherever they're listening around the country, what's the website you send them to?
FootprintsToRecovery.com.
Footprints to Recovery. T-O?
T-O.
FootprintsToRecovery.com.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got a couple more minutes with our guests here. We're talking about the scourge of opioid addictions in this country. And you know, in addition, resources for you and where to get help. Dr. Caitlin Simpson is Director of Clinical Operations at FootprintsToRecovery.com. What do you say to parents or grandparents or husbands or wives or girlfriends and boyfriends who know they love somebody in trouble and they don't know what to do?
I think the first thing to do is to educate yourself and understand the resources around you. That's one of the biggest barriers we see to treatment is that when someone is ready for help, that window of opportunity to engage people in treatment is so small. So if your loved one comes to you and says, I'm ready, I want to go for help, and you don't know where to call, you might have just lost your opportunity to get that person into treatment. So to educate yourself about your resources and where you can send your loved one.
It's very important. It's crucial.
Yeah. What about the denial of parents and grandparents and spouses and things about the addiction?
The codependence?
Well, yeah. Yeah, codependent, but you probably sense that your brother had a problem.
Yeah, it's funny. You can know it for years. You can know that your loved one has a problem, and you still can't fix it.
Well, I'm not saying you can fix it, but recognizing.
But you think you can.
Oh, I see. You thought you could take care of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I fix everything. Why couldn't I fix this?
Or like my family, you know, just kind of, if we don't add fuel to the fire, maybe it'll just work out on itself. Or right. Not my son, you know, he can't be that bad. He's mm-hmm. not like Johnny from down the block. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. you know,
that's an important piece of that, because there is a thing where you have to admit on some level that you didn't fail, and you didn't miss it, and now you got to do the right thing to get to it. Because, and again, this is a male thing too. I'm not saying women don't feel this way, but we feel we can fix everything, especially our kid. You know, it had to be
brutal.
You
can't tell me. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why did this work for you?
I can't do it without the support that I've had, you know.
But there's a lot of programs out there. Was there something about this that was different?
It is. You know, for me, it was that whole incorporating the life skills, you know, because at the end of my road, there were bank accounts that were overdrawn. I didn't know how to write a check. I had forgotten healthy eating habits, you know, how important working out and creating those natural endorphins were. So to have someone that I could talk to, have the, you know, the clinical team that can help me with all of my inside issues, you know, the self-hatred, the, mm-hmm. you know, the PTSD, the trauma, but then also let me know that it's not okay to live on Red Bull and cigarettes. Like, we need to actually teach you how to do these basic life skills that we forget. You know, because we're
how to take care of yourself
exactly
in a healthy way. You're a great spokesman for sobriety, and you ought to be proud of yourself, man.
Thank you. The only thing that I would love to see out of this is it help one person, because
right.
that one person can then send that ripple effect, and it's just creating change. Like, the awareness is so important. You know, me speaking out, and I don't have, you know, I don't believe in that anonymity for myself. Like, I tell my story wherever I go.
Tell your truth.
Because it could help that next person.
What do you do now when you're not doing this?
When I'm not doing...
Talking about how to help folks.
I actually talk about it all day. So I work at Footprints.
So this is the gig.
This is the gig.
That's paying it forward.
It is.
How about your relationship with your family?
It's so much better today. Like, you know, at one point, they really didn't want anything to do with me.
Right.
And, like, my brother got married, he had kids, and I'm involved in their life. And for me, that's the ultimate high.
Sure. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having
Appreciate
me.
Appreciate you being here. Doc, your website again, whether it's Arlington Heights or wherever, where do you send folks?
It is footprintstorecovery.com.
And there's other resources there as well, I noticed, too.
Absolutely.
So you can make yourself knowledgeable, or if you feel like you're in trouble, get there now.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you coming in. Safe
Thank
travels.
You.
And keep up the good work, Marine.
Semper Fi.
There you go. 9:32. Let's get to headlines next on 720 WGN.
We will strive for the highest graduation rate in the nation. Yeah! We can become the biggest hub of entrepreneurship between the coasts. Yeah! We will grow the diversity of our economy by growing jobs across Illinois. Yeah! Especially for communities that have been left out and left behind.
That was Roe Khan's J.B. Pritzker impression. I got to say, it's coming along nicely.
Thank you. I'm working at it very hard.
I thought you might be. Last night, I cashed out 11:15, 11:30, and then woke up at 2, and then got into it some more, and then woke up at 4 or 3:45, I guess, and got into it some more. I have a problem. I have a problem with politics, and it has to stop.
Hello, Steve.
I'm crying for help.
We love you, Steve. This is really an interesting night because, and the interesting is a terrible word.
It's either everybody's a winner or everybody's a loser, depending on your perspective.
And the president is going to take to the microphones in 45 minutes and tell everybody that he's a winner and everybody else is a loser. So you can expect that. I think this actually net really does help the president. Because he's got two things going for him. He's got a good wall in the Senate, although the map for the Senate looks very, very different in 2020. So there will be a lot of Republicans who will be up in 2020 who may not want to cozy up with the president, depending on what his popularity numbers are.
I can't imagine he'd do anything in the next 2 years that would be troubling.
I don't exactly right. He gets an enemy now. He gets to fight against somebody, and when things don't go his way, or they go after him personally, his taxes or whatever, he gets to jump up and down and whip up his base. You start to wonder. You saw cracks in it. There were some fatigue cracks in that base. Here in Illinois, man, it was bellwether what happened.
Well, you could certainly make the strategic political argument that the Dems won the House specifically because women in particular in the burbs said, not going to happen. Over 100 women were elected to the House last night for the first time.
Including the first Native American woman ever. That's pretty amazing.
It seems kind of crazy, doesn't it?
10,000 members of Congress in the history of the United States of America. That does seem kind of weird.
Wasn't enough that we took your land. We wanted to wait a while before we gave you
and you're not. And stay away. Stay out.
I think you can make the argument that both sides won or both sides lost. I think the problem, Trump is going to have to use the second most overused cliche after at the end of the day. If I could push back for a second. The problem he's going to have is there is no reason for the House not to investigate and stir things up for him and make him nuts or nuttier over the next year to 2 years.
His nuttiness works for his base, though.
Do you have to stir him up anymore? It seems like they're plenty stirred up.
And the question is, how many are going to fall off the, how many of the leaves are going to fall off the tree here in terms of that? Because, to use a term, there isn't. I think he's maxed at, what he's going to do. And they're everything, the one thing about Trump is that he'll come after you eventually. Right? He went after Mexicans and then nobody said anything. And he went after LGBTQ. And he went after
to-do list through the roof.
What's interesting is he did take a conciliatory tone when he was talking to Sinclair News, the company that almost worked for. Sinclair News.
That was close.
He talked to them and he And he said, you know, if he would have changed one thing, maybe his tone, maybe his tone. But then he took it back in the same sentence like he does. But, you know, you do wonder, was that just a day or two in advance because he was being told, listen, women, the several.
Listen, I think he's like most of us in one regard. He doesn't want to go to jail. I don't know that he's done anything that could rise to that level, but we don't know what Bob Mueller has in his report. And now that Election Day is over, I would think the first thing you're going to see is an indictment of Roger Stone. And then after that, we'll see where it goes.
Bat bleep November is what you're heading into right now, because you're going to end up with maybe as early as today, because he's getting to a press conference. He does not like to answer things.
Such a terrible idea.
They're going to ask him, who's leaving? Is your chief of staff leaving?
It's okay if everyone leaves, as long as I'm here.
Well, I think that you might hear something like that. Yeah. And he's going to start making moves. And will Kelly go quietly? Kelly's a good, a good Marine, but will he go quietly?
I think if Kelly goes, he will go quietly because it's a sense of duty and honor. However, the other Kelly, why am I spacing on her name?
Kellyanne Conway?
Yes.
That's who I thought Roe was talking about first.
The other Kelly, Kellyanne,
yeah.
Considering her husband, I think if she's removed against her will or she goes, I think she talks.
She signed a non-disparagement agreement.
Mm. See how long that lasts when she gets home, right. And her husband says, "All right, honey, let's get a show. Let's turn this loose."
Yeah, well, he'll get it, but they'll get sued. They'll get it injuncted. This is the problem. You're seeing that the people who've left under even. We're having Mooch on today.
Mm-hmm.
He signed an NDA.
Well, part of the NDA thing, though, is Reince Priebus is making $4 million this year. The only one not making money is the old press secretary.
Spicer. Yeah, he's doing okay. He's got a paying gig at Fox.
Oh, he does now.
Yeah.
Okay. But everybody's making money. And these are not the bravest people in the world to begin with, those who have already left. So I'm not surprised. And by the way, the guy that used to run Exxon, he already had plenty of money. He's fine.
Oh, you know, his book is going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to say some things. And he might. And that might be revenge served cold and maybe September of 2020. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that book coming out.
What are you doing this afternoon?
All right, so we got the Mooch. We got
I love the fact that he wrote a book. 2 weeks in the White House and he wrote a book.
Yeah, that was good enough. I actually really like him. We get along great. He's super smart, but he's also, I mean, but like a lot of these guys, he's selling something.
He gets it.
Right? He needs to sell, and now he's selling the Mooch. Mark McKinnon's going to join us also from, this is the last week of this season, theoretically.
Of the circus.
Of the circus. So he'll be on with us. We have Lester Holt. And who is now the most powerful Republican in the state of Illinois?
The most powerful Republican in the state of Illinois right now is... Man, I got nothing.
Adam Kinzinger.
Oh, very good point.
Yeah. He was the only guy who won, and he won by convincingly, 19 points or something.
Right, right.
And
you wouldn't believe all the inflatable elephants they had at the party that they can now just give to kids for the birthdays because they're not usable.
How was Ronner's fireworks barge here on the Chicago River? Did they use that last night?
You know what I knew he was in serious trouble last night? Because I thought it would be close. Is when I think it was Fox, where you appeared last night, but somebody last night said the Ronner campaign, interestingly enough, has rented a very small room for the
that was Fox 32 last night. That's true. Yeah. They were like, well, you can stand here and you can see that there isn't really a whole lot of anything in front. It was basically a camera perch because he knew people were. He was telling people not to go. He knew it. He was, you know, he was up here a number of times with you and with me over the last couple of weeks. He you know, hey, and when a politician says to you, listen, you never give up. It's not, that is not the, that's the kind of thing you said at the Alamo.
Yeah, exactly, Custer. Text from the 312. I'm a third generation Republican and a farm kid. I voted for Pritzker. 2 years without a budget, inexcusable. If anything killed Bruce Rauner, it was the commercials that reinforced that.
Yeah.
That he refused to compromise at all. All right. Oh, we got a flight. I'll listen to you this afternoon at 3 because I'm that kind of guy.
Thank you.
And you'll be on CLTV then as well as we are. Now, hey, Ro, wave to the friends at CLTV. It'll be the third television station or network you've been on in the last 24 hours.
I've got a fourth coming up next.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
Goodbye, everybody.
All right. Stand by. More to come in 720 WGN.
There is a special faith in the future, a light that burns in people who know both the agony of the hill and the freedom of the hilltop. And as your governor, I want to hoist that light high and let it show us the way.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Okay. Texters, 847. Thank you, Pritzker, for winning. Now I can have my internet back. We got a bunch here. Let's see. 630, I told you guys over and over, Kasten would win over Roskam, and Underwood would win over her opponent. I told you over and over and over again. Okay, I'm sorry, 630. I didn't know I let you down. 630, you realize for the next 2 years from the White House, everything that goes bad will be the House's fault. Yep, absolutely. 224, since when does a presidency consist of going after people? It's not in the job description. Yeah, I'm on your side. The blue wave became a splash pool. Lucky for Democrats, they had corrupt fake news media like CNN, NBC, and all the rest. Well, you know, Sean Hannity the other night called Fox fake news. So, you know, I guess they're all bad. 773, Steve, wanted to say thank you for the links and information. You made it a lot easier to vote. Thank you for that. Let's see. Well, there's so much here. There's so much to get to. Anyway, thank you for all the texts. We'll come back, and Bill and Wendy will solve the world's problems. And mere moments. First, coming up, stories of matter from Steve Bertrand in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. Tomorrow on the show, we'd normally have a big political hour. We had that today, and frankly, I'm a little tired of talking about politics, so I'm hoping we'll have anything but that tomorrow. We'll see. Dave?
Okay. What if you could find a way to get forgiveness of thousands of dollars on your federal student loans and lower your monthly payment in the meantime by half or more? Kaplan Law Firm has spent the last 3 years doing just that for their clients burdened by student loan debt. Let Kaplan Law Firm help you. Call for a consultation, 312-294-8989. That's 312-294-8989. Don't waste another dime paying too much for your student loans. Kaplan Law Firm is a debt relief agency helping people file for bankruptcy under the U.S. Bankruptcy Code.
And Bill and Wendy are here. How are you guys?
Hi, Steve. Nice to see you.
Did you stay up late watching the returns?
Yes. Yes.
That's a lie.
Yes.
I was up till late. I was up till late.
Yeah. That's when it ended late.
Yeah. That's when it ended late.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch any of it?
Yeah, a
bunch of it.
Remember when we were kids? And you guys are old enough to remember this. When we were kids and you had three channels?
Yes.
Three channels, three choices, and everybody was covering the election?
It was the worst day of the year for a kid.
Not anymore. You can watch any crap you want on time, on demand,
right,
or not. You didn't have to watch any of it.
Right.
But don't you miss John Cameron Swayze anchoring the election coverage?
I think my larger point is that's how Trump got elected. You can watch anything you want. You don't have to be informed about anything.
Right.
Although I didn't watch that stuff when I was a kid. Yeah, the returns, who cared? Although my kids watched this last night.
Oh, good.
It's a different era.
That's good.
I like that some of the stations had maps where you could just touch any part of the map and then that town would blow up and you could see, like, house by house how everybody voted. It was amazing how in-depth they could get just by touching it.
I don't want to, you know, force you guys to do this, but that's what I want for Christmas. John
King's those
big wall.
Google Vote. That's what it's called.
What are you doing today?
We are going to talk to Dr. John Duffy, our show psychologist.
There's a lot of people with mental problems.
This is well, yes.
Yes. Most of them are in office.
Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi.
No, yeah, they're on their shows. Yes. Well, mental problems.
Good booking.
Press conferences. We'll see what they discuss. My guess is the Coach Q situation.
I wrote in Coach Q for governor, by the way.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good call.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It didn't win. I didn't pay much attention this morning. We'll see you tomorrow.